We're talking about clothes and identity today. And if you walk into pretty much any standard clothing store for kids, even after all these years, the gender differences are pretty clear. Little boys' clothes in blue, little girls in pink. Wouldn't you think we'd be beyond that by now? Well, Shannon Henry Kleiber, mother of two teenage daughters, asked fashion historian Joe Paoletti, why pink and blue? And who made that rule anyway?
Oh, well, that's two questions. Yeah. The pink and blue thing, it takes several generations because babies used to just wear white. They introduced pastel colors for babies in the late 19th century, and then it's kind of a matter of fashion and also what looks good on the baby. So blue-eyed babies would often be in blue, and brown-eyed babies would be in pink or other colors, redhead babies in yellow. I mean, there are all these different rules for what was becoming. And then you start having this idea that you should dress children according to their gender, little children, babies and toddlers. For example, boys don't wear dresses like they used to. The age at which a boy is put into some kind of trousers gets earlier and earlier and earlier.
So boys used to wear dresses until age?
Until around the time they started school, they'd wear either dresses or a skirted, like a kilted outfit, like with a pleated skirt and a long blouse over that. And it wasn't considered feminine. It was just babyish.
So what changed?
Well, there are some things that happen about the same time. One of them is the advent of modern psychology, especially child and adolescent psychology. And there's a whole lot of interest in sex roles and homosexuality and prevention of homosexuality and what they considered sexual perversion. Up to that point, we look at those babies who are all dressed like babies. The reason they were dressed that way was because children weren't supposed to know about sex and sex differences. They weren't supposed to notice them. And one way to keep them from noticing those differences and being curious about them was to dress them alike. Well, when you start having psychiatrists who are saying, no, 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 the right way to do this is to emphasize the gender differences. It takes a while to catch on because there are people who are still a little bit squeamish about the idea of dressing a little boy like a man.
How does a piece of clothing become gendered? We've talked a little bit about the color of the clothing. How does it become gendered?
Wow. That's a fascinating question. The thing that fascinated me about the shift to pink becoming a girl's color is that it took so long. And if you read descriptions of pink clothing, say the turn of the century, it's a pastel version of red, and it's a strong color. A few generations later, they'll be talking about pink as looking delicate and dainty. Well, it's the same color. So it's a process that happens in the kind of cultural mind, over and over and over again, of saying pink, feminine, pink, feminine, pink, feminine. But it isn't a light switch. I have lots of people who say, well, wasn't it Mamie Eisenhower? Wasn't it Pinky and Blue Boy? Wasn't it the pink triangles in Nazi concentration camps? And it's like, stop looking for a light switch. Culture isn't like that.
What about unisex clothes? When did those become really a thing in fashion history?
Yeah, well, I think of unisex specifically as introduced in the middle of the 1960s and is kind of a thing up until the early 1980s, where you have these styles that are specifically designed for either boys or girls or men or women. It raised a lot of questions about gender roles and about what was natural as opposed to what was a matter of culture. And I think these are questions we're still grappling with. I have a daughter who's in her mid-30s now. And when she was little, she was at that last tail end of unisex clothing. So she was wearing primary colored overalls and primary colored long sleeve t-shirts and turtlenecks. And she was in a store with me when she was about 5 months old. And the cashier said, oh, how old is he? And I said, well, she's 5 months old. And I got a lecture about how my child was going to grow up confused because I wasn't dressing her like a girl.
Wow.
And I think those conversations are still going on.
Do you think that'll change?
Sure.
Today, I mean, we're seeing more of the high-end designers putting out unisex fashion. Is this, what do you think of the high fashion world?
I think they're responding to an interest in their customers and in mass culture in questioning, bringing up some of those same questions that were raised in the 1960s and 70s of what does it mean to be male and female? I think we're already pretty much agreed that gender is not binary, that there might be a spectrum of how girly or how masculine somebody is. The thing that strikes me about today's neutral is the idea of what is unisex or agender or neutral is so constricted because there's so much now that's gendered. There isn't a whole lot of in the middle what anybody can wear. I look back at Sears catalogs from when I was a kid in the 1950s, and there'll be several pages of play clothes for children. And they show boys and girls wearing elastic waist, corduroy pants, or poplin pants with striped t-shirts. And they're all the same. And there's no pink and no blue and no pastels. They're just all play clothes.
So is the future of fashion genderless or gender fluid or blurring lines somehow?
I don't think we're going to end up with like all neutral clothing because there really are times in a person's life and there are people for whom highly gendered clothing is very, very useful and is essential to their identity. Someone who is transgender, dressing in a kind of almost stereotyped version of the gender that they are, so that they might be more likely to want to wear a necktie or want to wear a dress, because it's helping to support that performance of gender. I don't think you can just say, well, gendered clothing is all bad. Gendered clothing does have a purpose.
Joe, what are some kind of clothes you like to wear?
Oh, man. Well, my designers are Eddie Bauer and L.L. Bean. Right now, I'm wearing brown corduroy pants from L.L. Bean and a long sleeve tee from Eddie Bauer. And I have an entire wardrobe of both those things. I like pockets.
Pockets.
I'm a big fan of pockets, and I think the feminist issue for today is pockets.
I really agree with you on that. And I think that some of the designers are addressing that, right? More women are getting pockets.
Yes. And that's a good thing. You said you have daughters?
Two daughters. Two teenagers. Daughters. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of sad in a way because a lot of the things that mark something as feminine are meant to attract girls and repel boys.
Hmm.
For girls, there's this whole permeable landscape. It's okay to wear blue. You can wear pants if they're this. There's all this kind of leeway that you have that isn't this straight and narrow thing. But with boys, a lot of the feminine stuff, lace, flowers, round collars, all that stuff, it's like an electrified fence. It's a don't go there. This is not for you. It's what they pay for having pockets, I think.
Yeah, it's, I mean, women kind of have a feminist encouragement to push things in fashion in different ways, but it sounds like it might be harder for men, and I'm starting to feel kind of bad for men in fashion a little bit.
I think stereotypes cut both ways. Sexism may harm women in certain ways, but it limits men as well. I would really think it'd be great if people could wear what makes them feel comfortable, makes them feel like themselves, and like they belong to the group that they feel they belong to, without being punished for it or ridiculed. That's a start, but maybe that's the end game too.
Joe Paoletti is a retired fashion historian from the University of Maryland. She's the author of Pink and Blue and Sex and Unisex. Shannon Henry Kleiber talked with her.